How you doing?
So I've had like a really high anxiety last like 3 days, all culminated today when I'm driving home I'm just blasting Dashboard Confessional. So like, what does that tell you about
it's a bad day.
My emotional state.
Yep.
So. I'm wearing my Dashboard Confessional t-shirt today.
Are you?
I am.
See, it's just, we're meant to be.
Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily fluid.
Thou shalt kill all of your
fans. And a dog fish a tampon out of the garbage. It ain't right
to Bible pages. But you can pretend like you will. A dog.
Wow. I don't want to do it. I don't like it.
Fucking people.
Henry is a liar. All the liars. Bye to the liars.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hi.
Tonight is our final installment of our three-part series on Henry Lee Lucas.
Closing the bleeding out season.
Closing
out the season of bleeding out. To be determined. TBD.
We'll see how we survive this.
I'm gonna say it's a screaming infidelities sort of season.
Screaming infidelities season coming at you next.
But first, we gotta say
goodbye to Henry Lee Lucas. Again, goodbye. This is part three of a three-part series. So if you haven't listened to one and two, you have to
go back
because there is a lot of background here. So when we last left Henry, he had confessed to literally hundreds of murders. He'd been convicted of 11 and he had been sentenced to death. So in this episode, we are going to take a short break from our coverage of Henry Lee Lucas and return to his sometime partner in crime, Otis Toole, who is the suspected murderer of Adam Walsh, son of John Walsh. So we will begin this episode with the abduction of Adam Walsh in 1981. This is 2 years before Henry was arrested. If you'll remember, he was arrested in 1983 and held for good. Big old warning. Right up top, Quinnies, this episode contains graphic descriptions of child murder and dismemberment. This is an extremely rough story. It does have positive outcomes, which we will get into, which is kind of like a light at the end of the tunnel. But if any of you are 80s babies like we are, Adam Walsh is just a story that every single one of our parents heard and was horrified by. And it really shaped like all the stranger danger, all of it. This is where it all comes from.
True.
Carly is going to start us off with the abduction of poor little Adam Walsh. There's just something about him, Quince. Oh, like the
he's
photo
so cute.
Of him in
Such
the baseball uniform, like
heart.
It reminds me of Aisha DeGray in her little baseball uniform. Like, I can't. It's just so sad.
Yeah, he's precious. He has gorgeous little eyes, too. His eyes are so beautiful.
Kid. Yeah,
great. Let's dive right in, Quinnies.
Cool. All right. July 27th, 1981. We are in Hollywood, Florida. Adam Walsh, he's 6 years old, and he went with his mother, Reveille, to go do some shopping at the Hollywood Shopping Mall, which is now the Hollywood Hills Plaza. Fun fact to keep in mind for later, this is directly across from the Hollywood Police Department. Reveille and Adam, they enter the mall through the Sears North entrance. Sears is a department store. I'm not sure if you young Quinnies would even really know what that is.
A freaking Sears, man. They were
Sears.
All the rage.
Sears was all the rage. And they had all the sales. Okay.
They had all the sales.
All the
they
sales.
Did the family photos. I puked on my dad in the Sears. We were getting our Christmas photos taken. I was probably about Adam Walsh's age.
Love.
And my father was in a suit. I was in a dress and I just threw up all over him and we couldn't get the pictures taken.
Oh my God.
Had to go home.
Anyway, they go to Sears It's a huge department store, huge on sales, and Reve specifically wanted to look at a lamp that was on sale in the store that day. So Reve wants to go to the lamp department. It's only a couple aisles over from the toy department. So Adam, while passing the toy aisles, sees there's a kiosk where the new Atari 2600 video games were on display.
Oh, the Atari, man. That thing was so dope.
I mean, so Sonic the Hedgehog, do that anymore. Baby. Like, I know they did it at GameStop for a while, like would have a game
to play. Yeah, I haven't seen that in a long time.
I don't know if they do it anymore. So anyway, Adam sees the Ataris there. And there's a few other, a little kind of older boys. There's like three boys there that are taking turns with the display, playing the game. So Adam wants to play. Reve goes, okay, just stay here and play. I'm only going to be a couple aisles over looking at the lamp. I'll be right back. She goes to the lamp aisle. She is gone for less than 10 minutes. She finishes in the lamp department around 12:15 p.m. She goes back to the kiosk to pick up Adam, but he and the other three boys aren't there. So right away, I mean, your stomach is just going to drop.
Yeah, it's okay, going to be so terrifying.
Reve looks around the area, looks in the toy aisles. Adam's not there, so she goes to ask a store manager if she's seen Adam and if where the other boys had gone. And the manager says that there was a little bit of like an argument between the boys about whose turn it was. So the security guard made them leave the store. The security guard was a 17-year-old boy.
Teenager himself. Yeah.
How are we doing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was a different time. It was a little bit of a different time.
I don't know. He was there. He saw that the boys, you know, were obviously getting into the tiff. He asked them to leave the store. And he, as he's escorting them all out to, like, not out of the store into another store, out to the parking lot, he's asking the boys, are your parents here? And he's assuming that all the boys and Adam are a group together.
Right.
The older boys say no. So he sends them on their way out in the parking lot. I don't know the exact ages of those boys. I just know that they were at least a bit older than Adam, who was only 6 and like a little kid.
Yeah, they weren't that young.
They weren't, yeah. But like, there's still a 6-year-old kid in the mix.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me that he sends them to the parking lot solo. That's hard to follow.
It is. And I know he's only 17.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're not there. Adam doesn't really speak up either. And later, Adam's parents would say, like, he was a timid little 6-year-old kid. Like,
he was really shy.
He was shy. He probably didn't really understand like what was going on. And he just kind of like went with the flow.
I truly don't believe that he was involved in the tiff.
No, I don't think so either.
No, I think it was the other two kids.
Right.
And
he was like the onlooker kind of. He was like, just
did he even get to play the game at all? He could have just been on the outskirts of the group the entire time and just got, in the mix. So the guard mates, the boys leave, and they go out through the same door that the other three boys had actually entered the Sears, which is the West Sears entrance. So it's a completely different entrance than what Adam had gone into the store from. It's thought, we're not 100% sure, but it's thought that while the older boys went on their way in the parking lot, Adam was left alone outside the store. And again, like, this is an area that he's not really familiar with.
Right.
I'm not sure he's ever been to the entrance at all, let alone, even if he had, he's only 6. Kid can go down a toy aisle and go to the next aisle over and like get turned around and like still not have any clue where they are.
Right.
You know, this is like a completely different part. It's outside. No idea where his mom is. Meanwhile, Reve had gone through the Sears. She's searching for Adam. She looks all throughout the toy department. He's not there. She calls her husband, John. He's at work. He's a partner at a hotel management company. He comes right over. In the meantime, she's having Adam's name paged over the PA system.
Over the pager, right.
While she's still continually looking through the store. While she's looking throughout, she actually runs into her mother-in-law, Jean, like just by coincidence, who happens to also be in the Sears. So Jean also is starting to look for Adam. She's calling on his name. They're calling
so
his name
many like weird turns of events so like this that crazy. Day.
Definitely. Yeah.
Like, what are the odds? You know, John gets there. He's looking. He's trying to speak to customer service about what's going on. And they're like unwilling to help him. How does that, a child is missing, even if he just wandered off to a different part of the store, how are you just not going to like drop everything and search for, I don't get it.
They brushed him off.
They did. Just the rage.
And it's just going to build. It's just going to build and build.
It is.
The police get there. They're helping in some way. It's undetermined exactly what they're doing, where they're looking, how they're doing it. 90 minutes goes by. Everyone is searching in some way. There's still absolutely no sign of Adam anywhere. The search is unsuccessful. The paging isn't helping. No one seems to have seen him. It's just, it's no good. So the police, they believe he was likely abducted outside the store. But nope, there's like nothing to be found.
Right. There's no evidence.
There's no evidence behind. Whatsoever.
So that's the 27th of 1981 that this happens. And basically like 13 days go by. Okay.
Agonizing and days.
Yeah. For these parents. Okay. Not too much of investigating is really done.
For like a six-year-old child. Okay.
For a six-year-old child. Yeah. There's not really a lot of evidence or sources that show that a lot of things went down. Now, what we do know that the investigators do find out is they find out about the security guard that he was just like Quinny addressed, that he was a teenager and that he there was a fight between the kids and that he had to separate them up and he ended up putting them out to the side. And just in exactly what Quinny said, the investigators thought that he was outside in the parking lot and that he must have been abducted. Their leads pointed to like someone that was, you know, coming through, a drifter of sorts, if you would, was about the only lead that they have. Now, in those 13 days, they have started a search effort, a search party where there are people searching for the missing boy. But mind you, this search is happening close to the area of where it happened and not very many miles outside of that during this time. And this is before
Amber Alerts are even a thing. Correct. So like, that's not helping either.
It seems and feels to the family in which Carla Quinn is going to get into this more about the botched investigation and how the parents, like, you know, they really felt that enough was not done. As many, we see many parents go through the same thing, that there is not enough getting out there. And it's to the point where the parents have to go to the media and go to the press for the stories to go out. And that's exactly what ends up happening. So on the morning of August 11th of 1981, John and Reve appear on national television. In this appearance, like, they were still hoping that Adam was alive at this point. They say they hope he's still alive. They have faith that he is still alive, and they offer a reward, and they say they offer $100,000 reward, and they posted this reward for the hopes of Adam's safe return.
Yeah.
Well, it just so happens that on August 10th, sources tell me different things. So a couple sources say that it was actually an investigator that finds the remains 100 miles outside of where the Sears shopping center was. Some people say it was an investigator. That one I find more hard to believe, as majority of my sources say that it was actually two fishermen.
That's what I saw too.
Yes.
Okay. Two fishermen find in a drainage canal, they find a head, a corpse head. And so it was actually only a few hours after that, the national television, that it was only shortly after that, the parents, John and Reve, find out that they have confirmed this head to be that of his, of Adam Walsh's head.
It's so sad too, because like, they're told and immediately they're like, no, that's not our son. Like, we can continue looking, because that's not him.
They just wanted to have so like, much hope.
Of course they're going to reject that idea.
Yes.
Of course. Mm-hmm. But like, oh, just to hear those words uttered to you as a possibility. Even.
And I mean, they don't trust the cops anyway, until this point. So they're like, how do you know?
They're like, sure. No. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you haven't done jack shit.
And those poor fishermen.
Oh my God. This is like the people who found Lacey Peterson.
Exactly.
You know, like, you're just like, can you imagine how in horrific?
Shock. You have to be in shock. And and so they do not find any other part of his body.
No, never.
Still to this day.
So,
here we go.
The Walshes are living every parent's worst nightmare. Literally. And something about it too. And I think it's John who goes on to say that when they did that media appearance and announced the reward, they made a decision to become public figures. Mm-hmm. Like, they made a decision to be like, we're going to tell everyone in the country what happened to our kid. This happened to us. It could happen to you.
And we're going to be the ones keeping his name in the media because nobody else is doing it.
Right. Exactly. And they did. Everyone knows who Adam Walsh is, like, especially our generation.
Yeah.
Everyone knows who he was. So for just immediately afterward, for them to find out that he is in fact already gone, they had already decided, we're doing this. Mm-hmm. No matter what happens, we're doing this. We're telling people this story. People need to know that this happened. After Henry Lee Lucas was arrested in 1983, he, of course, starts confessing, like Carly explained to us last episode, and he implicates Otis Toole as his partner in crime for many of these murders. Now, Otis was already in custody at that time because he had been picked up in April of 1983 on suspicion of arson. Because as you'll remember, as Katie told us in episode one, he was sexually aroused by fire. So when there are fires, the police department is like, let's go check out that guy. He's being held on suspicion of this arson incident, and the police start questioning him about the murder of a 65-year-old man named George Sonnenberg. So on January 4th of 1982, this man, George Sonnenberg, was barricaded inside his home in a boarding house in Jacksonville, Florida, when the house itself was set on fire. And he died a week later from complications related to the injuries that he got in the fire. And they start questioning Otis about this. You know, did you have anything to do with that? Do you know, you know? And he provides a full written confession. And he said that he was in a consensual sexual relationship with 65-year-old George Sonnenberg. And they got into a fight and he set the house on fire. Killed him, set the house on fire, and gave him injuries that ended up killing him. So when Henry was arrested in June of 1983, he starts talking about Otis. And at first, Otis, who's already in custody on these other crimes, denies involvement. No, I didn't have anything to do with that. Won't talk to the cops. But then he changes his mind and he starts backing up all of Henry's stories. You'll notice, right? And remember from last episode, there's decapitation in the murders of Henry Lee Lucas with Becky and with Kate. There's dismemberment with Kate. There's definite decapitation with Becky. So this is a story that is coming around. You know, they're saying, hey, Henry said that this is what he did. He said that you were there or you knew about it. And Otis at first says no. And then he starts.
It almost makes me wonder if they wrote to each other and he was like, yo, these cops are treating me real good. If you started me at these murders.
They were allowed to talk to each other.
Yeah.
They were actually allowed to talk to each other.
Right. So he could be telling him like, yo, get on these cops' good side and they'll give you everything you want.
Wendy's.
Yep. Yeah. There's like, there are recorded. I don't want to listen to them. No. I don't think you Quinnies want to listen to them, but there are recorded phone conversations, jail to jail, Otis and Henry talking to each other. They were talking, no doubt about it. And you're right, Quinny, they were probably sending letters. I would not be surprised at all.
There was the question of whether Otis could actually read and write, but I think he could.
I think they both
in some way
kept
shit close to the vest.
Yep. Okay? They just were like, they played dumb a lot.
Yes.
As often as they could. So in total, Otis ends up confessing to 6 murders in Jacksonville and Tallahassee during this time period. All of those murders, all 6 of those murders, he said he committed on his own. So those are completely separate from all the ones that he's implicated in with Henry.
Right.
So now that we know that we have this lunatic running around this area of Florida, killing people, they start asking him about Adam Walsh. And on October 21st of 1983, Otis Toole confessed to the murder of Adam Walsh. Otis had been to the Sears mall parking lot specifically in Hollywood, Florida, multiple times. And he would panhandle and he would try to, you know, look for cars that had doors open so he could steal change, stuff like that. And he would go into the Sears, sometimes use the bathroom, whatever. See, you know, he's loitering. How many times do we see these guys just creeping around?
Straight creeping.
Just straight creeping. And the Sears employees have asked him to leave multiple times. He's been asked, like, he's gone into the store and they recognize him now and they're like, no way, out of here. This time, unfortunately, on the day that Adam Walsh went missing, Otis was in the parking lot. He saw Adam alone and he lured him into his vehicle, his white Cadillac, and he told him that he had toys and candy inside. And once he had Adam in the car, Adam started crying and said he wanted to go home. Otis said that he punched him in the face, which only made Adam cry more. And then Otis beat him unconscious. He actually said that he, quote, walloped him, which really makes my stomach turn, to be honest, because it kind of sounds like something that was said to Otis when he was a child, like you'll get walloped for misbehaving. You know what I mean? Like it just sounds, about the term.
I don't like it either because it's almost cartoonish. You know, it's like almost making light of the fact that you just are beating the shit out of a young child.
Yes, like essentially beating him to death, like almost to the point of death.
Yeah.
It's and it so is. Gross.
It's like cartoonish, Carly. You're right. It's like a little kid's way of saying it. It makes me sick. But
well, he also was not, he was kind of like, he was had a really low IQ too.
Right. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And so maybe he just spoke that way.
Yeah.
But still, I don't like the term. And so in what it was probably a mercy for this little boy, he was probably unconscious for what followed, from what we understand, from what Otis says. Yeah, we can only hope. Otis said that he pulled over in a rural area and he used a machete to decapitate Adam. He said that he drove around with the head of this little boy for many days within his vehicle and forgot about it. And then when he remembered that he had it, he threw it into a drainage canal, which of course is where the two fishermen would end up finding the remains. No mention of what happens to the rest of the body, which again speaks to me to the validity of this confession, because the cops know that there was a decapitated head involved, but the cops don't know what happened to the rest of the body. So Otis confesses to a detail that the police already know, but provides no information that the police don't already know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's just not, by the end of last episode, Katie's like, you can't believe anything these people say. And you just can't.
You don't know what they were also. So there's also a lot of sources that say that he was also shown documents in order to try to get confessions out of him as well.
Yes.
And that police, if they didn't show him something, that they would actually, like, there's interrogations with him where the cops are saying really detailed descriptions to make it seem as though Otis is the one that, it's like really almost the same kind of thing that they were doing with Lucas as well.
Yes. And it reminds me of Jesse Miskelly. The way that they're like from the West Memphis 3, where they're like, oh, but that you left the head in a drainage canal. Right. And then he says, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they feed him the next bit of information.
Right.
And he says, yes. And then eventually at the end, he signs a piece of paper that says, yeah, I did all those things.
But then there's also the theory about the movie Adam, about Adam Walsh, that was released in 1983.
Right.
Okay.
About what happened. I don't know if it's like movie in the theaters movie, or if it's like a Lifetime kind of situation, but there was the movie Adam released in 1983. It tells you all those things. Yeah. It says Sears. It says where. It says the head was found and not the body. It says what likely happened to the head, whatever, yada, yada. Apparently, I heard from True Crime Garage that Otis would later say in one of his times that he recants the whole thing, that he saw the movie while in jail and got the idea and wanted recognition. And that's why he knew all of those details, because they're literally in the movie.
See, so this very...
That's a possibility.
Totally possible.
Yeah, it is.
And it's
because the timing is very close.
Yeah, same
here. We just don't know.
No,
we don't know. And that could also be a full lie.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Right. He could just be saying shit because we know that he's already doing that. But really, that we go over this time and time again, we get so frustrated as members of the public with law enforcement when they won't share information. It's happening right now in Idaho with this quadruple murder. People are so upset that we're not getting information. And it's like, you see a case like this, like Adam Walsh, you see Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole manipulating the information that's out there. And it reminds you, we can't know everything. They have
as much as we want to.
They have to hold some things back because.
Yeah. And that if they're not holding that stuff back and they're just going at it with all this information, then you know something isn't right.
Yeah.
Like that's not something is weird about that.
You get one shot at this. No. You get one shot at taking these people down. And if you don't build a good case, I mean,
that's it.
Look at Casey Anthony. She's got a peacock special, you know? So just.
Oh, I could puke everywhere.
Pukesgiving.
So after Otis confessed, investigators go out to his white Cadillac and they lift the bloodstained carpet from his Cadillac. So the car has blood in it. So they take the sample from the Cadillac and they impound the car. And they're only able to determine a blood type at this time because in mid-80s, right, DNA is not popping off yet. Investigators conclude that there's no way to tell if this blood is in fact the blood of Adam Walsh. Now, I made a mistake in the first episode and I said Otis Toole was convicted of the murder of Adam Walsh, and that is not true. It's more likely that he was convicted by the court of public opinion because the police never charged him with the crime because their evidence was weak, right? With the blood staining, they could not definitively tie him to the crime. However, once DNA advanced and the new investigators are on the case in 1994, and they're like, oh, let's retest. We got DNA now. Let's retest the blood on the carpet. It's gone.
I'm not laughing, but I mean,
okay. Oh, doesn't it get worse? Oh, it gets worse.
It's so much worse.
Bermuda Triangle of evidence.
It is.
Don't know what happened to it. The investigators are like, all right.
I didn't give my evidence to Carly. I'm really sorry.
Like, okay. So investigators are like, fine. Whatever. Let's look at the car. Let's test the whole car. Let's tear the whole car apart for DNA.
Oh, but wait.
That would be so nice. Let's do that.
The car is gone.
The car. What? The whole
Hollywood, Florida Police Department lost the carpet and one whole entire car.
One whole car.
I also had that they lost the machete as well.
Oh, yeah. The weapon
in question. Yeah.
Yes.
One whole car down.
How do you miss one of those things?
That looks cough suspicious to me.
It looks very, very bad.
All the
something
way
ain't clean.
Top Quinn's.
Otis would go on to recant later on, right before the end of his life.
Yeah.
And say, I didn't know. I had nothing to do with the murder of Adam Walsh.
I just wanted the milkshake.
I just wanted the attention. Just like Henry, you know, and Carly's going to get into truly how completely ass backwards this investigation was from the beginning. But Otis did have his death sentences for murder commuted to life in prison, which, you know, we're going to see a little more of that when we get into what ended up happening to Henry Lee Lucas. But it just feels like someone in a position of power owed Otis Toole and Henry Lee Lucas a favor.
Seriously.
And yeah, they just end up rewarded in weird ways that don't make any sense. But after his death sentence was commuted, Otis Toole died on September 15th of 1996 of cirrhosis of the liver. No one claimed his body. None of his family members claimed his body. No one
took him home
from the penitentiary. And he is buried in an unmarked grave at the Florida State Penitentiary. He was 49 years old. Carly, like, they must have come up with like another really good suspect, right? And like, we must know who committed like the one of the worst child murders in American history.
And they must have done like a really good, thorough, clean, solid investigation, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they must have learned from their mistakes here.
It just goes down in history. It's just one of the most thorough and effective.
Good.
All right.
I'm sure it's going to be something we hear
a lot. Basically what it all boils down to is that like John and Revay like knew it from the get.
Yep.
And they never, ever let it go. And they never stopped trying to make the police accountable for their lack of action. And I just cannot applaud them anymore. It's like amazing.
Yeah, they're They're really admirable
truly,
human beings.
Truly believed that the complete Hollywood Police Department 100,000,000,000% botched the entire treatment of Adam's case. His disappearance with the missing person investigation. Then when it was a murder investigation, John Walsh has gone out publicly saying that like it was a complete lack of any sort of coordination. There was no plan. There was absolute nothing.
Yeah, like no movement it was on the case.
A bunch of bumbling idiots, essentially. Yeah. And he's not wrong, unfortunately.
No. And somehow they managed to stay classy.
They
about
did.
It.
Like though, they managed they to like they really did.
They managed they did. To like still present themselves as like very articulate, very like respectful people while saying like you did a horrible job. Exactly. It's like very hard to do that.
Like they didn't call them bumbling idiots. I'm calling them bumbling idiots.
Right.
Like
right. No. But that's basically but what they're saying what is they like are. You're incompetent.
So actually, John Walsh, he would later write a book about Adam and the whole story. It's called Tears of Rage, which is like truly the only name that book could have. Like, yeah, it's perfect just title. Perfect. He wrote in the book, they were a tiny local police agency that had limited resources and never manned a search anywhere near this size. We did have a gut intuition that mistakes were being made.
Everything
seemed so chaotic and disorganized. I mean, that's as classy as possible to say that the local police did absolutely nothing to find my missing six-year-old son.
Literally.
And prevent him from being horribly killed and then decapitated and then never found his actual body.
It's just terrifying.
Like it's you, just you, how do you how?
I also looked for this too and I could not find it because I don't think there's anywhere that says it or doesn't say it. I want to know if the first question for Reveille was, would he have run away?
Bet you did.
I can't find anything that actually says that. And it would just be so absurd because he's six, you know, but like that's their favorite thing to
say. 100% favorite thing. I know I didn't see that anywhere, but it did cross my mind because of course. And actually in the beginning, the police spent a lot of time looking into Reveille and John themselves.
John was a suspect.
We have of covered course. Many, many a case where the parent or parents are directly and 100% involved. This is not that case. And while I understand they need to rule them out, they spent way too much time looking into that when critical minutes and critical hours and critical days are completely lost. Reveille was right there. In what way could she have anything to do with it? He was at work. It was known he was at work. There's like no question. And then if you just look at any footage of them at the press conferences, any interviews, you can see how genuine and in grief they are.
Yes, there's it's absolutely true. Seriously, really can.
Seriously.
There's no
it's like way. It reminds me of Elizabeth Smart's parents.
Yes, Quinny. Yes.
And it reminds me also of the Ramseys a little bit too, in a lot of ways.
Patsy specifically.
Where you're just unconsolable, completely unconsolable.
Completely unconsolable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're looking at the parents at first. Like we said, that's normal. But in the meantime, like, I don't see anywhere that they're really having a big manpower looking in the direct area of the parking lot. They're not really looking at in or around all the cars.
No,
where's like, the camera even, anywhere? There's
they're
nothing.
Like not working with highway patrol. No. They're like not doing
anything.
Like, even especially if they think it's a fucking drifter.
Exactly. You think it's a drifter and then you're not going to
look in cars.
Cool. Did anybody find the boys and ask them what happened?
Seriously. Yeah.
Anybody? Right. Anyone? Or did they run away too? Like later on, the Walshes would actually hire their own private investigator because things are just not being done. There's no information, there's no evidence. And that's not unusual. A lot of the time people do. In the meantime, there was a man named Mr. Matthews. He was a polygraph specialist and he was a homicide investigator for the Miami Beach Police. He was called in to consult on the case pretty early on, even like 4 days after Adam disappeared. And he would kind of like go in and out and consult on and off like several times throughout the years. Unfortunately, he had some really good ideas, but he would always clash or butt heads with the lead investigator on the case, Detective Jack Hoffman.
We see this all the freaking time.
So the lead of the bumbling idiots police don't want to have any help from a consulting homicide investigator from the Miami Beach Police, which is notably bigger, mm-hmm. and I'm sure has dealt with more of this.
Better training.
Okay, better training. Doesn't want the help. Doesn't feel the need. We're just going to, we'll figure it out.
There's like so don't. Much dick swinging going it on. Like literally. Get over yourselves.
My dick's bigger than your dick. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
I just can't.
Oh, it's so true.
Does your junk hang low? Does it wobble to the flow? Can you tie it in a knot? Can you tie it in a bow?
We need something to laugh at.
Can I you mean, slap anything. It over the head into Henry Lucas's head? We got to try to laugh a little through this.
We got to try. So mind you, Detective Hoffman, the detective, Otis would actually confess to more than once.
Oh, so wait. I'm sorry, Carly. Wait, one more time.
Hold on, rewind.
So the lead investigator who is refusing
investigating
help from a larger, more experienced, better trained police department mm-hmm, mm-hmm. is the one who eventually elicits a confession from Otis Toole? Mm-hmm. Cool, just making sure.
Matthews is like, could I possibly interview Otis for something? Any of the murders? Doesn't need to be Adams. Anything? Can I interview him? Anything? Can I just talk to him for like a quick minute? Nope. Hollywood PD just, nope, oh. Can't today. He's too busy going to Wendy's today. I'm sorry. We're bringing him to Sears, to a different Sears to see if he knows this one. That's they don't right. even give him a reason. Like, that's the point. Right. Whether or not he right. has a right to interview him or not, whatever, jurisdiction, blah, 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 blah. It's the fact that they literally are just like, no, because I don't want you to.
Yep.
Like, that's it.
Exactly. It's just grandstanding. It's just child's play. It just has no place.
There is a
in a criminal investigation.
Killed 6-year-old boy. Get your ego out of here.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So eventually there's a new chief of police in the Hollywood Police Department. And then at that point, this is years later, Matthews is able to look at the case file. There are like 10,000 pages in this case file, none of which is entered into a computer whatsoever. Luckily, it wasn't in the street. It was actually held in the police department, but that's another day. Matthews is the one that goes in and catalogs interviews and catalogs evidence, and he puts everything in chronological order because it wasn't already. So like that just tells you what the state of the files.
Yeah.
You know what the I mean? Disarray. Like that, the yep. disarray, the disorganized, the chaoticness. According to the files, no law enforcement official ever conducted a formal investigative interview or polygraph examination of Otis Toole.
Wow.
Everything was treated as a statement with the detective acting as a stenographer and no substantive questions being asked.
It's like so blood boiling.
So what you're basically saying is they did absolute shit all.
Yep. They took a statement.
Took a statement.
Like you would from a civilian. A day.
Like you would from literally, a witness.
Like you would go, yep, after a crime or something, you would go jot down some notes on a little notebook and little napkin, take a statement and that would be it.
Cool.
Wow.
Okay. Cool. Awesome.
Just in case you had any question about this whatsoever.
Great police work.
Detective Matthews from the Miami Beach Police, who wanted to interview Otis Toole, completely astonished. That is not how police work is supposed to go. Just right. in case you had any question if that's how a homicide investigation should ever be done. That's not it. So that's basically where we're at.
Well,
and nobody in a lot a of dick
shit
swinging.
Show. Complete and again, like show. Quinny said, and again, like Quinny said earlier, we still have grieving, suffering parents and families of lost victims.
Exactly.
That just want justice.
Maybe the Walshes would, at the very least, like to bury their entire son.
Yeah.
No? Just possibly.
And it's easy in this story to get very pissed at the Texas cops. In specific, but when you start to look at Florida and what they let happen, it is the same old song. It is the same thing.
And sources say that John Walsh and Revay did not believe that Otis was the killer.
I heard Jeffrey Dahmer did it, Quinny. That's yeah. what I heard. I heard Jeffrey Dahmer was poking around the Sears parking lot, and I heard it was him, Quinn. So
yeah, mm-hmm. So you want to tell us about that? Yeah, so some witnesses did say that they saw, one witness says that they saw a strange man that was walking towards and into the toy area of the Sears. And another witness claimed that they saw a young man with blonde hair as well as a protruding chin that threw a struggling child into a blue van. Apparently, these witnesses also later recognized some pictures of Dahmer in a newspaper after he had been arrested. So they like confirmed that it was him. However, we state many times here on Straight Up Evil that we never know if we can take witness accounts seriously. But when they did do some research, they did also, work reports did reveal that the delivery store company where Jeffrey Dahmer worked actually did have a blue work van during this time. So work reports did confirm that. Some other reasons that they did suspect him was because he was actually living in the same area during the time that Adam Walsh was abducted.
Yeah.
And in fact, records show that he was living between the Hollywood, Florida and Miami Beach area.
Yeah.
And that he was actually commuting from back and forth from Hollywood, and he would go, I don't know, he did something in Miami and he would commute back to Hollywood, essentially Florida, and that he was there at the mall on that day, according to witnesses. Another reason that he was suspected as well is because a lot of people assumed that, you know, investigators included alike, and as well as reporters and media, they felt that it was, yes, there was some history of Henry Lee decapitating some people. It wasn't so much Otis Tool's definitive modus operandi, you know, his MO.
No, Otis
whatever.
Is fire. All right, about exactly. fire.
And so one article I found in my research was that when they went into Dahmer's apartment, they found a lot of evidence of decapitations. And so because of that, it was easy for them to put a lot of suspicion, and a lot of conspiracy theories came out about Dahmer possibly, you know, he could have been there here at this point, and he could have been there at that point, making it very possible that he could have been the person.
Yeah. And they asked Dahmer.
Yes.
Him.
Oh, thank you. Oh my God. You're so good. You're so good, Quinny. Yes. I actually have that quote. Actually, thank you. You are absolutely right. Because they did ask Dahmer about this and he completely denied it. He denied it a number of times, having any involvement in the crime. And he stated once, I've told you guys everything, how I killed them, how I cooked them, who I ate. So why wouldn't I tell you if I did it to someone else?
I believe him.
Totally.
I really
And
does.
I totally actually believe him too. Same. I agree. Apparently also, the one other thing I forgot to mention too, one other reason they thought, apparently Dahmer's dad actually called the America's Most Wanted hotline and told them that his son Dahmer was a pedophile. And so this caused a lot of local suspicion. That's what I got on the whole Dahmer.
It's just crazy to me because so many times, like the majority of child abductions is from someone they know.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular one, not only is it not someone
complete strangers, they know,
but right. it's a question of two literal well-known serial killers in
killers.
The same area. Like that's crazy.
This really speaks to how bad that investigation was.
Exactly.
It does.
Because you can't rule out Jeff Dahmer and Otis Tool. Like
right.
you can't
what are you
do
doing?
Your job.
Seriously. Can't rule out anybody at this rate.
Exactly. Exactly.
And besides, Dahmer kept the heads.
Exactly.
I know that's horrible to say.
I know.
But he did. So Carly is going to get into probably the best thing that
came out of this
horrible tragedy.
So 1984, U.S. Congress passes the Missing Children's Assistance Act. And this was a major part in due to the advocacy of John and Reveille Walsh, along with a bunch of other parents of missing children that they got together with. And they're advocating activists all the time. This act would allow the Walshes to form the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. NCMEC, which we've talked about so many times. So this is formed on June 13th, 1984, and it was officially opened by President Ronald Reagan in a White House ceremony. Also around that time, a little bit later, but around that time, there was a national 24-hour toll-free missing children's hotline, 1-800-THE-LOST, also have said many times in our missing episodes.
Yep.
Essentially, those of you who don't know, I'm sure you do, but NCMEC is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to, quote, help find missing children, reduce child sexual exploitation, and prevent child victimization. Their mission statement essentially is every child deserves a safe childhood. Like, you can't get more, you know, that's...
Yeah, like the worthiest cause.
Exactly. It's beautiful. Exactly. It's beautiful.
They work with families, victims, private industries, law enforcement, and the public to assist with preventing child abductions, recover missing children, and they provide services to deter and combat child sexual exploitation. And they've honestly, they have been so incredibly successful at it. Thousands and thousands of cases on missing children have been solved and found because of them.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Like,
yeah.
Because they're working as a clearinghouse, but they're also just as a resource. Like, it's just amazing.
Yes.
Their website is missingkids.org. Go ahead and take a look. You can volunteer. You can sign up for the emails like I do. You just get an email of anyone missing in the area and they give you a printout just to print out and, you know, place posters around, anything. This little fact I just had to edit. For the mid to late 1980s, there was a very popular toy, and it was a teddy bear called Teddy Ruxpin.
Love.
Oh my God, I love that life. Fucking teddy bear.
Teddy for life. Wanted one so badly.
And my cousins had one and I did not. And I'm still a little bit bitter about it.
Same. That motherfucker was expensive, yo.
Teddy Ruxpin, if those of you who are too young, those little Quinnies who are too young to know, it's basically a bear that reads to you.
It reads you stories.
It reads you stories. Its mouth moves. It is the cute, it's the most wholesome ass thing in the entire world. And it was for the 80s, it was just peak. So Teddy Ruxpin would actually become the official spokes bear.
Stop it.
For the NCMEC at like the height of its popularity. Okay. So due to the partnership between Teddy Ruxpin and the NCMEC, they would actually make certain stories that Teddy Ruxpin read to the kids feature like some extra information for the kids to stay safe from abductions and sexual predators, etc. So like, it's literally, I mean, I cannot tell you enough like how much good work they're doing. And it's all because of the Walshes and the other families, but it's really, they're at the crux of it.
Yeah.
John and it's Ruby beautiful. Walsh,
okay? Like, obviously, you know, John would later become the host of America's Most Wanted, the show we've already talked about a little bit, which also has been extremely successful.
Oh,
it's
solved
thousands of cases. Like, it's unreal.
Yeah.
But then John and his son Callahan, they currently host a series on Investigation Discovery called In Pursuit with John Walsh. So, like, they're still so cute.
They're so cute too.
Still doing it.
Yep. Because he absolutely 100% dedicated his life after this happened to him.
Exactly. Yeah. To
and
make
it's just
sure
so positive.
To avoid it.
And Ramey did too. She avoid just not it at as all costs. Much, you know, on
right.
TV or
he
whatever.
Was so
but
much more of a public figure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely.
To do that press conference and then find out that your son is already dead, that could have been the end of him talking about this.
Right.
And people would completely understand.
Exactly.
It would right.
be totally
but
understandable.
But he just refused. He just,
he's like, I'm not going to let this go.
I ain't standing down.
I mean, you could argue like he's changed America.
100%.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
He's like one of America's great heroes, I feel like, in
he
a lot
really
of ways.
He really is. Honestly. I totally agree. I mean, you see these documentaries about child abductions in the 70s and even the early 80s, pre-Adam Walsh. People don't know what a pedophile is. People, that
right.
term is
right.
completely like
or a
no
serial
one,
killer. Or
yeah,
a serial killer.
Yeah, no one
killer.
Is like putting that together. Amazing. Okay, so Otis is dead. John Walsh is making his life's mission into protecting other families and children from something like what happened to poor little Adam Walsh from happening to them. What's going on with Henry? Quinny, how's Henry doing in the old penitentiary?
Yeah. I reckon it's time we have to go back now a little bit. We have to backtrack a little bit. And when we left off, he's on the inside now. He's confessed to all these murders, but while he's getting spoiled by the Texas Rangers and all these confessions come out, and now that he's been on the inside for a little while, well, Henry does just what Otis did as well, and he starts recanting a lot of these admissions, right? And he starts saying, you know, I didn't do this. And we had the skeptics all along that we mentioned, like Hugh Ainsworth and the newly appointed DA, Vic Fiesel. Shout out to Vic Fiesel also, if he ever wants to come on our podcast. I'm all about it. I have so many questions for him. He still thinks that, like, Becky Powell could be alive out there somewhere. He still
doesn't believe any of it.
He doesn't believe
any of this shit.
He doesn't believe he killed any of them. So he starts to recant a lot of these things. What ends up happening is when they go back to look, he says, you know, I didn't kill Orange Socks. Like, I didn't do the Orange Socks murder. And he starts recanting it. And he says, you know, I just wanted to make Officer Jim Boutwell happy. And I just wanted to please him. And so I told him everything he wanted to hear from the very beginning, essentially. And 6 days before his execution, because we, you know, he was sentenced to death, as we mentioned in episode 2, our last episode, he was in fact sentenced to death. He received the death sentence. And 6 days before his execution, it was in 1998, Governor George W. Bush, who was the governor at the time, he actually, due to the fact that there was no evidence whatsoever pointing to the fact that Henry did in fact kill Orange Socks, other than his admission itself, there was no evidence. In fact, there was evidence that showed there were work documents that showed that he was actually somewhere else entirely. And so this really proved that there was no way that he could have committed that murder. And because of that, for the first and only time ever in Governor George Bush's career, he actually commuted the sentence, which means that the sentence changed essentially. And it went from a death penalty or a death sentence to essentially life in prison.
And he had a lot of controversial executions, George W. Bush. He executed several people. Carla Faye Tucker comes to mind. She had a huge movement behind her, no criminal history. Yep. She committed a heinous crime. She completely admitted it, you know, she turned it into an evangelical Christian. She had all these things. He executed her, and he executed a couple of actually diagnosed retarded individuals. He was not one to pardon.
No, it was
and
a
Henry
shock.
Gets a pardon?
Yeah. Yeah, he's from Texas, is what I feel like why he did it.
I mean, I'm sorry. We're starting to, you remember like when we were kids and you would have that one uncle who would like get very upset when someone brought up like Richard Nixon? And you would be get very upset. Like, this is, it would ring up George W. Bush, and we're all like triggered because we're all like, we're seriously, so, we were there.
We lived it.
For that time.
It was a rough time.
It was a rough fucking time.
I mean,
so yeah.
But then Trump happened. Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Let's
makes you miss Georgie Porgy.
Oh, God. Makes Georgie Porgy look like a damn saint. Makes him look like one of the angels right out of Jesus's church. On March 12th of 2001, at 11 p.m., Henry Lee Lucas was found dead in his prison cell. He died from congestive heart failure, and he was 64 years old. He was buried at the Captain Joe Bird Cemetery in Huntsville, Texas. His grave was marked originally, but it has since been unmarked because there was a lot of vandalism and theft issues pertaining to his grave.
Now, was his body claimed? Thank you.
It drives me so insane. I don't know that both of these guys died natural deaths.
I know.
I personally am not a fan of the death penalty. I'm not a death penalty proponent, and I don't even like that. I don't even like the idea of the state executing people. And I have a problem with the fact that they just got to go, go in peace. He just gets to die in his sleep. Like, are you kidding me?
No.
Quinnies. Otis and Henry are long gone. Their legacy is not. We still have so many questions. So before we get into final thoughts, Quinnies, finally, and put this thing to bed. Did they even do anything?
Okay, really funny about this particular part of the outline when you wrote as this part, did these assholes even do anything? At first, I really thought you meant the police.
Yeah.
No, dude, we know the police didn't do anything.
Harlequin, I fucked the outline up too, Harlequin.
I was like,
I thought the reward at first, I thought she meant a reward for Henry Lee Lucas. My ass is on the computer for an hour trying to find a reward for Henry Lee Lucas.
I'm like, there's nothing to say, there's nothing to look up because no, they didn't.
Like, no, they did not. No, of course, the cops, no, we know the cops didn't do anything. So, I'm saying, did Otis and Henry ever actually kill anybody?
I eventually got there.
I believe he killed a couple people. I think he killed some people.
I think he would have to kill, Henry would have to kill some people.
He killed his mom. We know that one for sure.
Right. He killed his mom. But anything past that, because again,
we don't know. We've
never and I know Vic Fizell, you know, and I believe a lot of the things he has to say. I understand why he is like, she could be, Becky could be alive. They've never identified. Their
bodies were never confirmed. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Laura Burns could also be alive. Laura Burnsley could be a completely made up person.
Right. Yeah, she could never have existed. We wouldn't even know.
We have no idea. That's how insane this is.
I would like to think that you can't come up with so many stories of murder without actually having committed some along the way.
I read somewhere too that as many now with that, with all the technology and DNA and everything and all the advancements we've made in technology and everything, as much as they have disproved a lot of the murders, I think over 20 murders, they have been able to officially like declare him not the person just solely on DNA. However, I did read there were a few detectives and investigators that like would put him on the spot and about certain murders, and he would bring them to an exact place, and that it would be like, it would be so obvious that there was no way that he didn't do it. So like, it's like, as much as they knew that a lot of them he probably didn't do, there were ones that they were like, other people besides just the Texas Rangers saw.
Right.
That he was like, you see what I'm trying to see. Yeah. You get what I'm trying to say.
There are things that point to his guilt.
With my words tonight too. There are things for sure.
It's not just, you're right, it's not just the Texas.
There are some that were like, it was like, you know, he did mention one crime scene, for example, that the cops did not validate for him, like that he actually did validate himself. Mm-hmm. And there was no way for anyone else to have known that. So they knew they had to believe that one, essentially.
What I really think is, I do think that they both definitely murdered people, for sure.
Right.
Which ones they did or didn't, whatever, whatever. I think that they're both heinous, but I think that Otis is the worst one. And I think that because of a few reasons, but like in that one interview that you hear him say, I don't remember if he was talking about Adam or somebody else. He says, it wasn't me that did it. It was the hand of death.
This is a whole other,
side thing.
Quest of this story.
It is. And I know that there's a billion different theories on what he means. Mm-hmm. Some people think that the hand of death is Lucas because they were like, little cohorts like
also in my research, like, didn't he have a family member that was like a satanic worshiping ritualistic question.
Henry wrote a book with a guy called The Hand of Death,
right,
which is about a satanic organization in the Everglades,
allegedly,
that they were contract killers and they were carrying out missions for people and shit. Right. He says in that book that he brought the fucking poison to Jonestown, that it was Henry who did that on a mission, whatever.
Like, see, and the reason that I bring that up is because for whatever reason, it solidifies to me that Otis is the one that is the truly more psychotic and just dark-minded, heinous thinker. Like, just, he's the one who's more apt to do all these things, where Henry has it in him, has done it, but he just wants the damn infamy so much more. It's putting me off. It's like, because you've said you've done hundreds and hundreds, like, I don't know if I want to believe that you did any. Like, I think you did, but Henry, Otis isn't that big into being famous.
No.
He's just completely unhinged.
And he's not, you know, like, he's not interested in being famous until Henry exactly. starts getting
right.
exactly
in,
the special
you know,
treatment.
The yes. special treatment.
I
exactly.
think he'd be off killing no matter what.
And I right. do think he was around or not. Henry can be reached through emotions. We saw it with Clemmy. We saw it with his time on death row. He becomes highly emotional about this whole thing. When he talks about Becky, he gets highly emotional. Like he can somewhere in there be reached emotionally.
Honest?
Cannot. No.
Not at
it's
all.
It's not
at
there.
All. It ain't
He's
there.
On a different plane of existence than us. Like,
totally.
100%.
So Quinns, final thoughts. Henry Lee Lucas.
I never want to hear their names again. Good on that.
Same. I'm fine if we ever don't ever fine talk about them ever again.
Final thoughts are don't go anywhere.
Never
don't talk
speak to
anyone.
Anyone again. I just feel like there was a time that we missed Quinny's. It was not in our lifetime. We just narrowly, by the skin of our teeth, missed it, where people were casually murdering.
Yeah.
Where there were people walking around having just committed killing. Murders.
And it wasn't a big deal. Yeah.
We had no means to catch these people. You know, they weren't on TV everywhere. There just wasn't
social media.
Like they're just, you didn't have a camera in your face all the time, you know, and there were just multiple opportunities. I feel so terribly bad for literally anyone who crossed paths with either of these men. Mm-hmm. I feel terrible for the families. If you check out The Confession Killer on Netflix, they do some great coverage of
it's really good.
The families,
it's really well done,
who straight up do not believe Henry Lee Lucas had anything to do with the death of their loved one. They are still today trying to find answers.
Yeah.
They deserve
and
them.
And still feel like that killer is still on
out
the
there. Yep, yeah, free.
And it just goes to show you, even if they did it, even if it was Henry Lee Lucas who committed these murders, if you don't follow protocol, how often does Carly have to say this?
I mean,
if you don't do things by the book and you don't pay attention and you don't conduct a proper investigation,
to lose a whole ass car.
Where's the car? Guys,
like,
where's the car? Seriously, all of those murders and all of those detectives that came from all over the world and other, all over the country and the world. What about all of the ones that aren't true? Where are all of these other people?
Where are
these
murders? Sheriffs, district attorneys, there's even sometimes police chiefs or head of police in some municipalities. They're all elected positions. Get your ass into the voting booth
for
at your local election
sake.
And demand more of these people. Demand it. Oh,
I can't.
Quinny's. All right, Quinny's. That's Henry Lee.
God.
Check
Goodbye.
Done.
Thank
Bleeding out.
Goodness.
Done. Easing into the screaming infidelity season.
Easing right in there.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.